And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here today. It is Woden's Day. It is the 23rd of April, 2025. Hope you're all doing well out there. It's good to be back with you once again here. Obviously, we have some good stuff coming up too. A couple of plugs here before we get started for today. We have Curtis Stone tomorrow coming on to talk about, he's from the Freedom Farmers, who will join us to talk about the broad range of, you know, homesteading, return to the land, off-grid living and these kinds of things, kind of in the context of, you know, a general pro-white, pro-European movement. But also if we have some, I think we'll spend some time on this too, kind of addressing not only the political landscape and kind of how, you know, technology and progress is changing, you know, these kinds of things like farming and, yes, automation, AI, so many things we do talk about, how drastically that could change within the next decade or so. But also legal changes, right? New governments come in, legal changes could prevent people from forming, you know, intentional community, legal trappings within that, things like that. In addition, of course, to the crazy, out of control, you know, automation of food, the synthetic nature of some of the food that's showing up right now as well. So I think that'll be a good show. So tune in for that tomorrow. We're going to start at, what do we set? Starting time here, 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 10 p.m. Central European time, so tune in for that. Should be good. Take myself down a little bit. A little bit too loud. All right, so with that out of the way, we are going to cover some things kind of tangentially adjacent to that. There'll be some overlaps, obviously, but I want to spend some time today talking about our replacement, because there's new versions of our replacements out all the time. This new version just dropped, and we'll go through some of them. Also touch on Orania a little bit down in South Africa, because they are now under, you know, pressure. They're being targeted. This has, you know, been the case for some time, but the EFF down there is stepping up and basically demanding a review of Orania. We know what that means. This is, of course, Julius Malema. He and his very tribal sponsor down there that have, you know, targeted Orania for some time. But it's in the context of him refusing to deny killing white people and stuff like that. So although it might say we need to review Orania on the plaques that they're holding up, what's at the end of that, right? So we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about, actually, it's something I'm going to talk with Curtis about tomorrow too, see what his thoughts is on that. But as you potentially then form these groups and associations, and although it might be, you know, as you said, legal and all these things, what happens when the demographic changes rolls around, right? Are these just areas that will be targeted? Will they just be removed? Because you do have this in, even within the establishment, beyond the replacement and the demographic changes and the potential legal changes of this kind of lease culture, everything is a service and you'll own nothing and all that stuff, right? So I want to kind of drive people off the land. So anyway, there's a lot of interesting questions there to tackle. So I hope you tune in live for that tomorrow. And then, of course, Friday we'll be back with Flashback Friday, as usual. And then next Thursday, we do have an in-guest studio. Is it Thursday? Let me confirm. Yes, May Day on May 1st. We have a guest in studio. We're not going to announce that just yet, but I think you'll like that. So we'll... we will keep you posted when we go live there. I think it's set at 2 p.m. I think we set 2 p.m. Pacific. That's 5 p.m. Eastern. So tune in for that. All right, a couple of things here before we get started then. Albert, thank you so much. Another huge, generous donation. Thank you so much, Albert. Awesome to see you. He says, hi, Henrik. Hope everyone is having a great week. We're actually getting some summer weather here. We are as well. Almost 80, he says. Great show Monday on the Pope and the European culture. I really enjoyed it. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. Looking forward to another great show today. Here's something funny for you. Alex is looking extra based here. Let me see. What are we what are we looking at here? Where's my computer at? There we go. I am not a clone of Hitler. Let me see here. Is that overlap? Kind of looks like him a little bit. But what's going on above and below there? I think he did. Maybe he did a couple of different AI-generated images or something like that. Now I saw to counter your meme here, Albert. I saw this one. How about that one? I forget who did that. But that was kind of funny. Holy smokes! Yeah, pick a side, Alex. Which which one is it? Thank you, Albert. I appreciate that. Good to see you as well. Yeah, we definitely have some nicer weather rolling in around here. All right. Good to see you, folks. Yeah, if you do want to send a super chat today, I can plug that here in the beginning. Please help support the show. Send a chat through entropystream.live/redicetv. That's up and running. You can do it through our power chat. You can do it on Rumble, Cointree, or I think the tip function on Subscribestar as well. Yeah, I just have to remind myself to keep watching and observing all the options. But yeah, that helps us tremendously as well. So thank you, everybody, for your support. We appreciate it. But anyway, so let's get into after some of the... Man, that's so good. Isn't that good? That one is great. There's some funny memes out there. I'll put it that way. Okay. Anyway, we have this interesting situation here where, you know, we'll talk about Rania later, right? There's a quite sizable, sensible, yeah, well, yeah, it's sensible. I'm supportive of it. Let me put it that way. Movement of returning to the motherland of Africa for some American blacks, at least. But here we can show that there's a little bit of tension as well when black Americans actually do go to Africa, and occasionally things like this happen. Now, I'm not sure what's going on here with this fine gentleman in question here. American tourist get robbed for his chain by a garbage pail kid. I think it is the title here. I'm sure there's a deep dispensational dialogue about you know, epistemology and the deeper fundamental questions here in the background, but unfortunately, folks, I'm unable to translate at this point. Wait for a Babel fish to roll around for AI, I guess. I think this is the medic part of the interaction here. All right, good times. Yeah, so Western Front in Rumble. So that's Ooga Boogas versus Din Do Nuffins. There you go. That's also a framing. But anyway, we're going to talk a bit about. Okay, fine. We're going to talk about replacement here a little bit. And yeah, I mean, it's not only, of course, robotics and stuff that we'll get into where we're being replaced. As we know, they're also replacing us when it comes to our culture and our heritage. So I thought we could look here at the latest version, the update here. Latest version of Eleanor of Aquitaine just dropped. Eleanor of Aquitaine.
To be by his side, to set him free, I paid for his release, brought him all the way home, said this fighting must cease. Made my boys promise to always be friends, gave Richard his crown back to his peaceful end. Then I supported my youngest King John, tell ya ain't no job harder than being a mom. Oh, 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 no, no.
Okay. Now this is, was this BBC Youth, I think they're calling the channel there. Where's Scott Adams when you need him? I think I found Scott here. I'll join you in a sip here, Scott. How about that? So that's how she blows. And you know, it'll be something else tomorrow, and then a new. Imagine when like all this tech rolls around, then basically it would just be like, here's the latest thing. Here's the latest. It would just be like an, you know, you think that replacement is bad now when it comes to like the tempo or the frequency of how they're doing this. Man, it'll be so confusing by the time, you know, but a decade from now, right? Possibly even by 2030. This will seem like, I don't know, kindergarten or something. I'm not sure. But anyway, we have another one here, too, in terms of the latest version of your replacement, which I thought... We didn't talk about this one yet. I wanted to show you the promotional posters that went up for this year. You might have seen it. We shared it in our Telegram. Stop hiring humans. The era of AI employees is here. Now, I want to... This is funny because this one guy who goes into depth here about what's going on, and properly or coincidentally, it's an Indian telling us about this ad campaign here.
Hiring humans campaign from San Francisco triggered the internet. Some are calling it dystopian and some are calling them anti-humans. But here's the plot twist. Behind this controversial message is an AI company Artisan that's actually hiring more humans. Their team of 35 is expanding to nearly 60 people despite telling others not to hire humans. When asked about the contradiction, Artisan CEO admitted the billboards were just marketing bait, and clearly it worked. And it worked beyond expectations. They just secured $25 million in funding days after the campaign went viral. The campaign was designed to be controversial from the start, and both the outrage and the $25 million prove it delivered exactly what they wanted, attention. And follow 100X for more.
Okay, so obviously first of all, they're hiring more humans so that they can replace you faster. It's not that this is a long-term position here. They're hiring enough coders to bang on the keyboards for long enough time until their time is up and it's necessary. And, you know, again, historically, you know, I'm not against development of technology, obviously, and I'm not a Luddite. You guys remember the Luddites? Look into that if you haven't. But this is a different thing, because now you're talking about shit that will replace you permanently in potentially every single field. In the same way that like many people could kind of see the writing on the wall when it came to open borders and migration over, you know, decades and decades ago now, I think majority of people that have their head screwed on right can also see how this, and it's not that it's like, well, but we can also use it and stuff. And sure, of course we can, but who of us are running these AI companies? Who of us are building the robots that they're the AI robots that they're seeking to replace us with? Well, we're not, as far as I know, unless there's some based people out there that's secretly building these to, like, you know, to be on our side or something. It's not really what you're seeing at this point. So I think resistance against it will be, you know, a proper approach. It's just like, I mean, it's not going to stop. We're not going to stop it. That's the reality of it. It's a way too much money and power and institutional force behind this to stop it, right? So it's not just like AI, you know, assistants and things like this. It's the actual, you know, humanoids, right, that they're rolling out. Here's one example. We've talked, of course, about Musk's Optimus bots and all that stuff. Well, obviously China is doing it. I'm not sure there's some European countries working on it. Obviously America's working on it. There's other countries, Japan is advanced on this front. You know, many are investing in this, right? In fact, we have a thing out of Thailand later, which I think you'll like. But here is China's humanoid robot getting a supercomputer-like brain power and eagle-eye vision. Kepeng Zbeng, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, Zbeng sees iron, which is the name of this freak. Is it Iron Man? What's the... Okay, anyway. Zbeng sees iron as a personal assistant for admin and customer service in homes, offices, and retail beyond just manufacturing. Chinese car maker Guazhou Xiaopeng Automotive Technology, or Zepeng, we call it, has unveiled its updated humanoid robot, Iron. The humanoid robot is powered by the Turing AI chip, of course, which is of Turing fame from the Turing test. How do you determine if you're talking to a robot or a computer? Well, this guy, a gay guy from Britain, I believe, he was the one who, did he not kill, do I remember this correctly? He killed himself with a poison apple, just like Snow White. Did he not do that? He was like famous for like, he helped to defeat, he was like elevated after his life, right? It's like he helped to defeat the Nazis because of some, you know, decryption technology that he had developed so that they could break down, like, was it IBM or what was it in the beginning? Maybe not IBM. It was another, anyway, whatever. But anyway, so they're naming it after him, the Turing AI chip with 60 joints, 200 degrees of freedom, and 3,000 tops of processing power. Is that teraflops? No, it can't be teraflops. That'd be insane. I assume that's what it stands for. The unveiling is part of Zhipeng's AI tech tree strategy, which combines AI, energy solutions, and embodied intelligence to build a future ecosystem of smart EVs, humanoid robots, and flying vehicles. The future is here, ladies and gentlemen. And it's the hand of Chinese Zhipeng. Interesting to note, too, that Tesla's very much the same thing, right? Self-driving car, starting it as a car company, utilizing AI and connecting all the cars to a central computer. Then they use the data from that to formulate these new versions of these robots, which these cars are. The self-driving cars are like AI robots on wheels, right? Anyway, here's some footage that they released of this thing as well. I don't think this is AI generated. I think this is the actual thing. Now, wouldn't he be driving the car? I mean, they are the car, I guess, to a certain extent. So I guess it's the robot driving the other guy to the location or something. Anyway, here's from the presser over in China.
They're
very excited about this. And here's, he's doing some manual labor here. So just like it does in the Tesla factories. Isn't that interesting? Did they share how to construct? Anyway, I think, was this the one that was kind of interesting? Let's check out a little bit from this one here.
Xpeng's robot utilizes even more Turing AI chips than Xpeng Motors and equipped the robot with the AI Eagle Eye perception system, which was released on the P7 Plus. This system not only allows the robot to see its surroundings in 360 degrees, but also in 720 degrees in three-dimensional space. In the development of its robots, the robot must be capable of walking and planning its movements, which requires reinforcement learning. Additionally, it needs Xpeng's end-to-end large model for autonomous driving and a substantial amount of data. We have conducted extensive research on the robot's walking capabilities. The AI OS developed by Xpeng includes capabilities such as conversation, memory, and reasoning. We are excited about the potential for thinking abilities in the future, which would allow us to advance alongside Xpeng Motors. Currently, both our robots and Xpeng's cars utilize the same large models within IOS, and they have been trained on extensive data sets from around the world. I have some exciting news to share with you. AI robots are already being implemented at Xpeng's factory in Guangzhou. Yep. Some roles for the upcoming Xpeng P7 Plus, which is about to be released and delivered, are currently being performed by these robots.
Exciting, huh? So that's your replacement right here. I wanted to play a little bit of this one too, because obviously they're going to wheel out the sex bots here too. And it's interesting, we've commented on this in the past, that they always look like white women. Now, why is that? Let me see. What was the context here? Oh, listen to... Yeah, we could play a little bit. I don't think it was too many minutes in here. Yeah, about a minute and a half. So we could play this part of it here. And check out the reasoning. This is from the outlet here that the article is from. Interesting Engineering, 1.65 million subscribers. How great this is going to be.
The Uncanny Valley was a term coined by the Japanese roboticist Masahiro Mori in the 1970s. Mori's theory was that as robots become more and more like us in a physical sense, we react positively to them, until it reaches a point where they are too similar. A sense of unease pervades. Many people believe this is an evolutionary trait that calls back to a survival instinct of distrust and fear. And that is precisely where the uncanny valley lies. Humans have developed a natural aversion to creations that replicate the human form. This often unconscious bias is thought to come from how we instinctively recognize the subtle movements of our fellow...
It's funny how they show up like either, huh?
...beings.
Interesting. Based Interesting Engineering.
It's of our walks.
Well, it's also... It's also because it doesn't look real, but when it actually looks real to the point where you can't make a distinction, then you would be then that would be going away, I would assume, which is what they're working towards. I mean, they will take, granted, that will take a little bit of time. It's therefore easier to make these kind of, you know, android-looking things that walk around and they don't really have a face yet or whatnot. But I mean, they're working on that already, as we showed in the past. They're actually using living human skin cells to develop face and hands, fingers, and, you know, for the dexterity and these kind of things. I think they'll roll around. I was thinking about this the other day. Interesting, because showing a baby here, right? You know, kind of how, you know, we have a little girl, right? You can kind of see how a little girl immediately is attracted to, you know, like playing with, taking care of a baby, right? Which is this deep psychological... instinctual instinct, for lack of a better term, where you basically you understand things about yourself better by taking care of someone or something in the same way that you are or have been taken care of, right? So it's almost like as we try to understand ourselves, we develop these things. And I'm not saying this is like consciously necessarily on the part of everyone working with robots, but I'm saying if we progress, and if there's not a comet or massive solar flare or some shit like that, and this continues, you'll get into the Blade Runner type of scenario, right? You might be technically synthetic, or the robots might be synthetic, but there will be like humans, and I bet you'll roll around to a point where you will realize that the human form and the way we are designed is the ultimate design. It's just that right now we kind of suck collectively because, like, we're being poisoned and run over and psychologically screwed over and propagandized and everything else that we talk about. But the human is probably an ideal form, right, for what we're meant to do and how we were evolved by nature and things like this. So they'll roll around to replicating and just basically we need the robot, but then what we realize is we need to make the human. Do you see what I'm saying? The irony of all of this. But anyway, I'm getting off topic here.
Gradual micro movements of facial expressions and the myriad of emotions conveyed through our eyes. Tech companies today are ever more getting inspired.
There you go. Yeah, with the slug arms. That's not going to make you feel uncomfortable at all.
And are trying to recreate.
I mean, unless the objective is to kill people, yeah. I mean, then you would develop a psychologically terrorizing thing. At the same time, you would probably just make him. Unless the objective is to terrify, right? But otherwise, you would just make them as friendly as possible, and they will just lull you to sleep, to prevent humans from like taking up arms against them or whatever. Again, this implies that the machines go rogue, or that someone programs them to whoops, it accidentally went rogue, which is the other flip side of this. But you, what I'm saying is, you could develop such weird, strange creatures. I mean, again, just robots still, but like that, they're like unable to defend again. Like, just, it's just a set of spikes or whatever. They're like, there's like an endless possibility of just military applications and, you know, murderous warfare machines, essentially.
It's the natural world. We can now store data on DNA. Soft body muscle-like robotics are being developed. Human thought and interaction is being replicated with the likes of ChatGPT. And some companies are even trying to reproduce human-looking robots.
And so here it is, right? Here's a Q, the blonde, white, European, you know, excuse my language here, but fuck robots, right? Why is that now?
However, the Uncanny Valley represents just one of the major hurdles to overcome when developing this biological tech. The question really isn't, are we trying to make androids? It's, how soon will we have them? Building robots in human form that understand instructions and are able to work in a wide range of human-focused environments is most...
Woden says, I'll bang that robot. You're banned. I'm going to ban you, man.
...likely going to be a good thing.
Time out.
They could enable the replacement of cheap, exploitative manual labor,
yeah, so
opening up higher-paid specialist jobs.
Slavery. And how long? Like, they've already released the Hollywood movies about robot rights, okay? Digital nations are going to have the same legal rights as a nation. What was the other one? Yeah, they'll have, like, Supreme Court and, like, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, the robots eventually are going to roll around and they're going to be, you know, they're living to... This is a glorified toaster, right? A tool. Which, look, I get the argument of, like, obviously, if we have these things, we don't need open borders and replacement. But you'll get that and this now. There's no... Who anyway... Look, the BlackRock guy... Right, the Jewish BlackRock guy, Larry Finkelstein, he brought this up and mentioned that. I mean, some of them know, but I'm saying who on a national level is talking about, like, actually, you know what, we should probably not only stop and reverse and go into the minuses when it comes to migrants, because this stuff is rolling out. And sure, we might not have a million of them now, but there might be a million of them 4 or 5 years from now. So obviously, let's begin to adjust to these new circumstances, and in a way, in a short term range, that would be a, you know, your terms are acceptable kind of thing, right? But at the same time, what this implies long term is much more, even more. Well, maybe not more. If we're replaced. It matters by whom, but it doesn't. You know, you see what I'm saying? It doesn't matter if it's a metal thing or some beige, you know, flesh suit that does it, right? We don't want it. There's certain applicable tech that I think we can use, but ultimately where this is going and what the natural progression of this is, at least from the point of view of the establishment that are talking about what do we need all these humans for, and let's just offer them video games and drugs and what do we have, let's just kill them off, you know, kind of thing. No, obviously we don't want that either.
It's for humans. They may also allow industrialization to reappear in the West. Having manufacture close to the target market, creating more jobs within these countries, and cutting down on emissions from shipping mileage.
Yeah, so this is what they use as the excuse. It makes sense. But the question is, why was the production outsourced to countries like China and India and South America and all these countries to begin with, right? Cheap labor, international finance... banker class, you know, use whatever words you want to put on that. Traders, right? Traders in our government. Is that going to be addressed or what? Yeah, and industry might come back only for as long as you can build the robots. So until those robots can build new robots, and then it's automation, 3D printing, and all these other things. It will be temporary. And you'll potentially end up in an age of what they call abundance, right? These communists are talking about this. Wasn't it Grimes? Elon Musk's girl, she was talking about the solving abundance. We solve for just more shit. whatever you want, you can just 3D print it essentially, and you just squirts it out. meat they 3D print, eggs as fake and synthetic, develop molecules by AI. I mean, you just will not stop. Yeah, I could say Jews. Of course I could say Jews. That's fine.
Services, park upkeep, farming and manufacturing.
I don't want to repeat myself.
May one day all be managed mostly by robots. However, humanoid robots are not there yet.
While that's old. Like what they're showing that is old. I'm not sure when this video is from, but that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, errors happen, but I'm saying those types of mistakes of them walking and stuff, they've simulated like, you know, 2 million hours of humans walking and like they know. And if one robot knows it, all of them will know it because they're connected to the global brain, the cloud computer.
Have teamed up with Zika to implement swarm robots in their car factories. These appear slow and seem expensive relative to human labor for the same work. These robots are impeded with everything from their heavy bodies and the large battery packs they have to carry, to the hard drive space and cloud connection speeds to process the massive amounts of incoming information. Getting to the stage where it's viable to fully replace humans in these workspaces is going to take a lot more innovation. And that innovation seems to be coming from the natural world. As the saying goes,
see,
you don't get a
natural world. Observe nature and build them just like that. You want humans. Interesting. Isn't that interesting? You will just, this long, weird, perverted, strange, bizarre, painful arc.
It's a second chance to make a good first impression. That's why one area that looks to become the most...
And you can, of course, say, well, what kind of humans... to do the Civil War meme. But anyway, that's just here. My
controversial and difficult to crack.
Yeah, here's
the aesthetics element.
Here's
while this is arguably one of the most difficult and more niche elements commercially of robotic design, it's still an area companies are looking to crack. At the 2025 CES show, the robotics company Realbotics unveiled Aria and Melody, life-size and ultra-real.
Aria. And look at the... kind of the looks here, too, from our Pajit friend here.
AI-powered robots. They are the latest in a line of products from Realbotics, as the company seeks to create robots and AI that are indistinguishable from humans in appearance and social interaction for the betterment of humankind.
Mm.
Realbotics' mission is to create highly human-like robots. And we believe that the more human-like we can do in terms of building a robot...
He looks like a guy that would work in the porn industry. Look at those earrings there. What the hell is this? Whatever you do, don't... Make the robots look like that, okay?
But the more natural...
Immediate disgust response.
Acting with it will become... For us, anyway, it's the conversational aspect and the ability of our robots to express emotion that will bring those interactions.
So it's got to be diversity, meaning non-white, in every single field, unless it's sex robots. Then it needs to be these, like, the most Aryan-looking, women, I'm saying here. But, yeah. Who do you think this is for?
More social level.
The latest innovations include eye movement that can track people around the room. With cameras embedded in the eyes, the computer vision also allows multimodal interaction. The open source technology they use easily integrates with existing AI providers, such as ChatGPT, to bring physical form to the disembodied voices we have grown accustomed to for quite a while.
So basically, ChatGPT will be your Coomer vessel here, essentially. All right. Anyway, I think we've seen enough of that. You know where this is going. Here's another one. Just check out a couple of these headlines in the beginning, and one of them I want to look at, which is this from Thailand, this RoboCop, which they're now unveiling. Check this out here. Yeah, Marilyn Monroe bots. Exactly. You remember the segment, right? Land of Fake. Marilyn Monroe bots. It was Futurama. Yeah, maybe I should play that here, but it's dumbed down and kind of funny or whatnot, but it's actually true. Did I save that? Let me see if I have a copy of that. Maybe I don't. Okay, let me play this and I'll see if I can search for it in the meantime.
Hi, Thailand Songkran Festival went next level when the Royal Thai Police rolled out AI Police Cyborg 1.0, a RoboCop-style bot with 360-degree cameras and real-time facial recognition AI. Over in California Labs, Disney Research introduced a humanoid robot that mirrors your shyness or excitement on the spot. And in Beijing, 21 bipedal bots lined up against 10,000 humans in a half marathon, finishing more than an hour behind. Meanwhile, Vegas is gearing up for Autonomous, the world's first fully AI-operated hotel, and Ocado's robotic arms are already packing over 30 million groceries a year using computer vision, reinforcement learning, and diffusion-based generative AI. So let's talk about it. All right, let's kick things off in central Thailand.
Okay, he can cover a little bit more on the robot here.
Songkran Festival turns the city into a massive water-throwing extravaganza for the Thai New Year. On April 17th, 2025, the Royal Thai Police unveiled Polkol Nakhon Pathum Plod Pai, which literally means Nakhon Pathum is safe. But it's not a person, it's a RoboCop-style AI police cyborg 1.0. Picture a towering uniformed robot officer standing guard on Tonson Road.
It is interesting, too, that they're... Look, because it's that, like, the acceptance level, right? Why wouldn't... Now, he's standing on a little pedestal there, like a riser, right? But, like, why not make them, like, much larger or maybe even significantly smaller and like more that things like that that would like totally throw you off and might even like disarm you, right, psychologically speaking, if not literally.
In the Muang district of Nakhon Pathom province, decked out in the same dark blue garb you'd see on any local cop. This thing is stationary for now, but it's anything but passive. It's fitted with smart 360-degree cameras that don't just roll tape, they feed live footage into an AI system. That system pulls in video from nearby CCTV and even drone surveillance, then runs it all through onboard video analytics chips. Everything loops back to the province's command and control center, so if anything sketchy happens, human officers get real-time alerts.
And then, of course, pre-crime, predictive capabilities, Palantir is already working on this, right? So the AI robot, as you said, is stationary right now, meaning it can't move. But at some point, yeah, it will begin to run, and it will run faster than any human. We showed you a clip as a Western Warrior of the 10 meters per second. Now, these are, of course, not humanoid-looking, you know, bipeds, right? They were kind of like a cheetah, you know, type model. Again, they observe nature and monitor after that. Makes sense because nature is the perfect designer. But still, eventually they will move around and they'll tell you to, you know, put your mask on and you can't litter and stand 6 feet apart and whatever it is that's rolling out. All right, so I found the 2-minute segment here on the Marilyn Monroe bot from Futurama. This is it, essentially summarized in a funny way.
Ordinary human dating. It's enjoyable and it serves an important purpose. But when a human dates an artificial mate, there is no purpose, only enjoyment. And that leads to tragedy.
Neato, a Marilyn Monroe bot.
You're a real dreamboat.
Billy Everteen.
Harmless fun? Let's see what happens next.
And of course, she won't talk like that. You can install this with the raspy voice of Scarlett Johansson.
Billy, do you want to walk your dog?
No thanks, Mom. I'd rather make out with my Monroe bot.
Billy, do you want to get a paper route and earn some extra cash?
No thanks, Dad. I'd rather make out with my Monroe bot.
Billy, do you want to come over tonight? We can make out together.
Gee, Mavis, your house is across the street. That's an awfully long way to go for making out.
Did you notice what went wrong in that scene? Ordinarily, Billy would work hard to make money with his paper route. Then he'd use the money to buy dinner for Mavis, thus earning a slim chance to perform the reproductive act. But in a world where teens can date robots, why should he bother? Why should anyone bother?
That's right.
Let's take a look at Billy's planet a year later. Where are all the football stars? And where are the biochemists? They're trapped, trapped in the soft, vice-like grip of robot lips. All civilization was just an effort to impress the opposite sex. And sometimes the same sex. Now, let's skip forward 80 years into the future. Where's Billy?
Farewell!
The next day, Billy's planet was destroyed by aliens. Have you guessed the name of Billy's planet? It was Earth. Don't date robots!
Brought to you by...
Space Poop.
All right, not bad. But yeah, that basically summarizes it right there. That, yeah, why try harder, right, kind of thing. It's a doomsday plot. That's what it is. And they know it, too. That's what makes it even worse, right? But right now it's sold as, no, you'll be more safe and secure. You know, how multiculturalism has kind of brought more crime. Look, they won't say it in those terms, but everyone will understand that. So let's just wheel out this guy and, you know, he and his 360 vision and his, you know, butt receptacle will be happy to provide services for you, no matter what you want, okay? Everything will be good. Now check, let me wait for that one. Yeah, this is just the article about the RoboCop there with their 360 view and power and stuff. And so it's a little bit of a kind of a doll, you know, a mannequin now. But, you know, soon enough it won't be, essentially. A couple more photos here, too. But, yeah, they'll have their, you know, officer outfits on and everything will be nice and dandy. Now check out this one. This is a good, speaking of police specifically, right? Here's a good clip of something that will never be possible as they roll out the digital prison grid, which connects robotics with haptic devices, with biometric signatures, with face recognition, with satellite, drones flying in, like all kinds of shit that, you know, can just begin to imagine. Just look at this here.
Just a good old boy. Never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw. Been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curves, yeah. Climbing the hills. Someday the mountain might get up, but the law never will. Taking their way.
Yeah, so there you go. That will never be possible with AI robocops, right? Why? Because they will see and know everything. It'll be thermal cameras. And in fact, every single person that point the cop in the wrong direction, they'll be arrested too. They'll also go to jail or whatever. They'll be charged for diverting and shit like that. I mean, you probably won't even have a guy on a bike at that stage, but you get my point, right? Just more and more and more control, essentially. Yeah, butt receptacle. Was that too advanced? Did you not get that reference? Why I mentioned butt receptacle? No? Okay, all right. You can think about that for a little bit. I'm sure the coin will drop off why I said that. All right. Anyway, let's talk about the alignment then of these systems that are coming in. How ChatGPT 4.1 and Grok 3 align politically according to four different political orientation models. I don't think they did the F-scale test here, but obviously some of these tests are already heavily biased and liberalized themselves. And they say here, on the political compass test, you can see leaning more libertarian left-wing for most, or for both of them. You can see Grok is the black X, and the blue green dot is OpenAI. Political spectrum quiz, left-leaning, libertarian. I think it's probably more like here. Or maybe if we're talking about this thing, it's probably more like out here somewhere, probably. Actually, maybe authoritarian, I think, would be. Maybe up here then, something like that. political coordinates test, communitarian, left, right, libertarian, kind of center, more for somewhat more. Eisenach political test. Grok with the X a little bit better, while ChatGPT is more left, left liberal, social democratic, I guess. If that's the thing, was it Musk who said, yeah, the AI closest to the center should win. So that makes sense from a, you know, current maybe standpoint for some people. Yeah, you want it to be, you know, unbiased, obviously, kind of thing, right? But the thing with this is you can alter the entire, first of all, by what framework? The 1950s framework of what is left and right and conservative versus or the 2025 one, or when we're at, you know, 30 years from now, and it's maybe even worse on that scale. By that, this will do, you can change it whenever you want. Those who have the back keys, the back doors, those who program it can alter whatever thing. I'm telling you, this thing will be, and is already, inherently anti-white. It's anti-European in its nature. It's programmed with the same leftist, shitlib, anti-white talking points. And Grok has been maybe like slightly better on some things. But the point is, you know, if the environment changes, or it changes the environment, then it will adjust accordingly and just show, no, I'm totally in the center of these things. And again, just, you know, is that really what you want? A milk toast? I get it from the point of view of objectivity. I understand what the logical, reasonable argument is, but I'm saying our scales are so already so far off, right? So where will it be aligned? I think we know where it will be aligned. In fact, let me show you a couple of things here that's pointing to the dangerous aspect to AI and AI governance. This is maybe not news per se. You should be aware of this if you're not, but we've talked about Doge and the Department of Government Efficiency before and how they're installing artificial intelligence on the U.S. government. They're doing a dry run test to basically operate and run certain things. Eventually, we'll get executive power, legal powers, all these things. This is a natural trajectory of it. But they said here, they're just getting started. This is Wired, so this is like even some of the warnings are kind of, you know, from my perspective, from the wrong perspective. But regardless, USA is experiencing a self-inflicted trade war and a, you know, well, you can argue that, but that's not the point. And the constitutional crisis over immigration. Yeah, because they want to deport some MS-13 members. Wasn't that it? It's a lot. It's even enough to make you forget about Elon Musk's so-called Doge for a while. You shouldn't. To state the obvious, Doge is still out there chipping away at the foundations of government infrastructure, which is good. I'm supportive of what they're doing overall, but not what they're not. I'm supportive of the path, but not the destination, if that makes sense. Slightly less obviously, maybe, is that Doge, or the Doge project, has recently entered a new phase. The culling of federal workers, fine by me, to be honest. Bunch of, you know, government slugs, whatever. And contracts will continue where there's anything left to cull. But from here on out, it's all about the data. Few, if any, entities in the world have as much access to as much sensitive data as the United States. From the start, Doge has wanted as much of it as it could grab. And of course, that's the private-public partnership type of new endeavors that's about collecting as much data as possible. What was the other one? The reason for that? Sentient World Simulation. Was that what it was? Let me see if I can find something on that real quick. Yeah, I think this synthetic environment for analysis, this into why they, you know, why Facebook is free, and it's not to sell you, you know, band-aids or, you know, razors or whatever. It's to collect it for well, initially the simulation, but then at the end of that is to control the actual real world, right? Purdue University's Synthetic Environment for Analysis and Simulation, or SEAS, is currently being used by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Department of Defense to simulate crises on the U.S. mainland. So again, it was like, whoa, there's nothing wrong with that. Well, wait for it. SEAS enables researchers and organizations to try out their models or techniques in a public publicly known, realistically detailed environment. It is now capable of running real-time simulations for up to 62 nations, including Iraq, Afghanistan, and China. The simulations gobble up breaking news, census data, economic indicators, and climactic events in the real world, along with proprietary information such as military intelligence. Now, the extension to this is that there, you who are watching, and me and everyone else, have a version of themselves in these simulations. This is just one. There's many of these running. There's many corporations doing it. Many off. I bet you Palantir have their own already. But that's one of the reasons why they want access to even more and more and more data. The more data you have, the easier it is to predict. The more simple people are, the easier they are to control. Same idea. So the point here of this article, when I brought that up, is because that's what it's all about the data, right? They want as much data as possible from everywhere. Through a series of resignations, firings, and court cases, has mostly gotten his way, they claim here. In many cases, it's still unclear exactly what Doge engineers have done or intend to do with that data. I think they'll be outsourcing it, maybe using it for their own. Maybe there's a Musk overlap and he gets access to... So who knows at this point? Or maybe it will be retrieved in some other way, or hacked, or leaked, or whatever. Recent reporting from Wired and elsewhere... I missed that sentence there. Despite Elon Musk's protestations to the contrary, Doge is as opaque as Vanta Black. I didn't look into that particular case there, but recent reporting from Wired and elsewhere begins to fill in that picture. Start with the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, where Doge associates... This is interesting, right? Put the agency's best and brightest career engineers in a room with Palantir folks for a few days last week. Their mission, as Wired previously reported, was to build a mega API that would make it easier to view previously compartmentalized data from across the IRS in one place. And it goes on from there, but there's another Wired piece detailing this here, right? Palantir is helping Doge with a massive IRS data project. For the past 3 days, Doge and a handful of Palantir representatives, along with a dozen of career IRS engineers, have been collaborating to build a mega API, Wired has learned. And of course, we can mention a little bit here of Palantir, Alex Karp. We have some of his comments in the past. Now, they put him as being like some kind of right-winger and whatnot. It's true that he's begun to eye the Trump administration more favorably, as previously being more or less opposed to it. But that doesn't stand in the way of him being just a full-on activist, right? He come from the PayPal world with the Musks and all that stuff, right? Palantir CEO Alex Karp said, although the company won't build tools that predicts crimes, Palantir would do it very well. And if you read between the lines, that means that's exactly what they're doing. And he's already admitted that much, by the way, too. Remember the segment we played about him talking with Swedish television about how he's helping to keep right-wing parties out of Sweden and other European countries because, oh, they're hiring Palantir's predictive services to stop terrorists. Okay, great, but here's more of in order for multiculturalism to work, you need a digital prison system of surveillance to stop the people that want to blow you up so that you can keep living with the people that want to blow you up. That's basically the summation of that, right? I'm not sure what tools they are, how they developed, where do they tap into CC, I don't know how it works, but that's what they're working on. If you mirror more, another Wired piece, right? Palantir Technologies spots patterns to solve crimes and track terrorists. Wait a minute, that's pre-crime. Maybe not solve crimes, but to prevent it from happening. That is pre-crime, right? That's what that is. CIA background, of course, we know about that. How a deviant philosopher built Palantir, a CIA-funded data mining juggernaut, and it kind of it's the same thing essentially. But yes, Palantir's CEO Alex Karp has been very worried about these pro-Palestinian protesters. He called the anti-Israel protesters pagan, And he says that he's dreaming of a drone striking his enemies. This is the guy I want to share sensitive data about to build profiles of people, for sure. That's a very sensible thing to do. Here's the map here of the PayPal mafia, or mafia. Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, Max Levchin, Reid Hoffman, right? Epstein connected, allegedly. Luke Nosek, Scott Bannister, Dave McClure, Keith Rabois, Jerry Stoppelman, Jawad Karim, David O. Sachs, who's currently the crypto and AI czar under Trump, Steve Chen, Yishan Wong, Jason Portnoy, Russell Simmons, Rolefa Botha, Chad Hurley, Ken Howery, and finally Andrew McCormack. And as you can see, this ties into all the other companies that kind of has been an offshoot of PayPal: SolarCity, OpenAI, SpaceX, Pinterest, Uber, it goes on, YouTube, it goes on and on, right? How they all tie in and where the funds came from. I would add, it's kind of strange that he wasn't directly involved, but it's interesting that you don't have like a Mark Andreessen in there. But apparently this went back to something called Checkpoint, by the way, started out of Israel, which is kind of like the OG PayPal mafia. And the reason why I say that is because some of the money and the funds from this endeavor is what later became integrated with PayPal. And that's what, you know, many other people involved built PayPal. But check out Checkpoint, that developed one of the first VPNs, one of the first firewalls, somewhere in Tel Aviv. And so this map really overlays with this one of sorts. So that's something to, you know, might do a deep dive on that one day, but it's very interesting. Checkpoint, I came across it just the other day. And of course, we've done segments on this. I might put that up here. Actually, we did it in Western Warrior, but just how Israel is seeking to position itself as an AI superpower, because it ties into all of this as well, by the way. Mapping, tracking, the digital prison system that will be controlled by these very same interests at the end of it. And that's why I'm worried about this. So what Doge is doing on the way there might be good, and it's justified and necessary, but where they want to take you is unacceptable and should be stopped at every turn. So I don't agree with like the left-wing critique. They don't go far enough. They don't understand the true implications of this, maybe intentionally, or maybe they're supportive of that, because ultimately, again, as we said, the political alignment of the system that they're building will be a shitlib, you know, for the most part, anti-white system. So what's the problem? Oh, they're giving you a little bit of this now with the migration thing and whatnot. But a lot of that also ties into the Palestinian protesters and of deporting them and so forth, because this is on behalf of like Israeli interests, right? Okay, so Palantir is helping Doge for now with the RS data project, but this will extend even further later on when, you know, they have done this and they move on to the next agency and the next agency and the next agency, collect as much data as possible, feed it into some kind of system. If not this synthetic environment that they're building, it will be their own or it'll be someone else's. And also as the private corporation, right, the public-private partnership, so you have a government service that's being contracted out to a private corporation. Just imagine the time when the robots are rolled out, AI robotics, much less work. They will propose UBI at some point. Imagine the compliance that will instill. It will be like YouTube. You violated the terms of service. Well, you'll own nothing, and you lease everything, or it'll be given to you, and here's your UBI or whatever. They can flip a switch. Boom. All of that is turned off. You have no access to anything. You could be completely just lost in no man's land, essentially. Which connects to why we want to talk with Curtis Stone tomorrow about what do you do when this is being built around you? Do you just flee out of it? Do you have half one foot in that world and then one side out of it? We need, you know, backup contingency plans. Because this shit is going in right now, and it's not going to be stopped as of this moment. There's nothing that indicates that there's any brakes on this train. It's really bad. So then you need some way to be able to survive outside of that. At the same time, you can't just pull out, I think, entirely and become just a target of this system. Because as we'll get into next, as you do those things, legal things could change. The land you owned is now, you're driven off of it. Well, they can't do that legally. Oh, yeah, look at the enclosure movement of Britain during the beginning of the industrialization, for example, as a measurement according to what could happen and how fast that might be, right? So what we're looking at, I think, is as you have more people seeking to return to the land, and maybe there'll be, you know, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't do those things. Obviously, you must do that. So I'm not saying you should quit before you've even attempted to do it, but I'm just saying the reality of the situation, this is threat assessment, right, is that you have to take into account that this, anything that they grant you legally, and even if you do everything by the book or whatnot, or like, oh, what's the laws or rules when you form an intentional community? Can you buy property? Can you farm your own food? Or will it be some CDC thing, some health? It's dangerous to eat this food, and this, you know, you can't just grow things in the ground in sunlight organically and feed this to the people. This is illegal now, or whatever goddamn crazy kooky shit that they come up with next, right? So this takes it to Orania, because obviously they're. You know, not a breakaway movement, but they want to do their own thing, and they've separated, and they're buying property, and they're building, and they're setting things up themselves, and all that stuff, which is fantastic and great, and it should be happening. But be aware, right, of how quickly this could change when the ANC or the EFF or whoever, you know, a block of them decides, well, this is, in fact, this is the land that we want to expropriate. You didn't build that. You can't have that. Here's a clip from Orania right here. It's safe. And it's white. And it's nice. And as we know, that's a big problem. The Afrikaner settlement of Orania in South Africa, a project which has mapped out a survival strategy for Afrikaners in regions overrun by the Third World, is going from strength to strength, and the last couple of years have seen its schools population rise to unprecedented numbers. Fantastic. That's really, really good. Now, there's some critiques of Orania and all that stuff, and who's behind it, and Ernst Rust, is it? Recently talked with Ben Shapiro, and but whatever, it's fine. Although it might not be everyone's cup of tea, fine, obviously, go ahead and do it. Here's a little more footage here, right? 540 miles from Cape Town and 420 miles from Pretoria in the semi-arid Karoo region, you'll find a small town, Orania. No crime, it's safe. They are creating jobs. They're building their own. What's their secret? Yeah, what could it be now? There's a little bit more.
My name is Marit Murphy. I had this year the voorreg gekry om 'n heildronk in te stel op Oraniërs. Ons staan in die einde van nog 'n besige jaar en op die drempel van 2024. Soos die jaar na einde snel. Wil ek hê, ons almal moet terugkyk na die jaar en besef hoe gelukkig ons is om hier in Orania te kan bly. My wens vir 2024 vir Oraniërs is dat ons oom Piet van OVD se nommer van speed dial sal afhaal en eerder ons eie probleme self in liefde sal hanteer. Dat ons mekaar nie sal indoen nie, maar eerder sal saam doen. En dat ons met 'n permanente glimlag sal rondloop en weet hoe die wêreld daar buite lyk. Maar ons is veilig hier in Orania.
I understand some words of that. Something like, if there's a problem, we lift ourselves up, or...
In voorspoed ons dorp vol, en geluk vestig in elke Oranje se hart. Kom ons staan en lig 'n glas. Op Oranjes.
All right, anyway, just a little, you know, there's some nice footage of what they're doing, obviously. But again, this is a big problem. Because there can't be anything white anywhere. Now, there's, I think I've heard, and obviously we talked with Johannes Agenbach about this too, that it's not, you know, explicitly only for whites or whatnot, to the contrary of what EFF and others are saying. But that's fine. You don't have to. You gotta look. You gotta understand the like the environment. You know where they're positioning themselves, right? I get that. That you know, if you would just come out and say that or whatnot, then they could just now legally then go after you. And so you don't have to. You don't have to say what you do or what you mean all the time. You do it a little bit at a time, that, and that's fine. But regardless, it's not the point of why I'm bringing this up. The point of why I'm bringing it up is that what do you do then when you're physically in a country that is hostile to you and you separate and you do your own thing? Well, I think it's just a matter of time. Again, and that's not a discouragement from doing that. That's just part of the battle. But you're seeing the EFF now, the economic freedom fighters, holding plaques like this. Orania must be reviewed. Reviewed. That's right. That's one hell of a way to put it. We're going to review you here a little bit, okay? Is that okay? Yeah, where does this start, or end, rather? I'm going to play this one here. This is from, I think, just a couple of days ago. Let me see if I can find the right one here. Sorry, guys. Oh, no, here it is. That's right. I saved it down here. Here's the actual protest here, or whatever you want to call it. The Spurgout from Malema regarding Orania. At a march that was held in Kimberley in South Africa, I think just a couple of days ago.
The fight against Orania is not a distraction. It is a frontline struggle for the soul of South Africa. The existence of all white towns in the 21st century in a province where the majority live in poverty is an insult. Is an insult to the working class and to the values of the liberation struggle. While black communities in the Northern Cape suffers from underdeveloped, lack of basic services, landless and high unemployment, Orania thrive off the proceeds of racial capitalism and ideological isolation. This is unacceptable.
Who wrote this speech for?
Ultimatum. The EFF demands a formal response from the Premier's office within 30 days. If these demands are ignored, the EFF will escalate the matter. We will return to Orania in a greater numbers. We will make the memorandum to the national government. We will initiate a court process, and we will expose the complicity of any public official who protects Orania's unconstitutional practices. We will mobilize communities, youth, workers, and landless people across the Northern Cape. Our ancestors. It is our land, and we demand what is rightfully ours. This province cannot remain a safe haven for apartheid-style enclaves. We say, with revolutionary conviction, Orania must be dissolved. The land on which it stands must be returned to the people of Northern Cape. The economy is reserved. The economy it reserves must be opened. The idea it represents must be defeated. In conclusion, fighters.
Scott, you got any input on this, Mr. Adams? Is that meme too old now? Have people forgotten where that came from? Yeah. Anyway, you got some of this. Is it Galloway's comment on South Africa? It was very revealing as well. Do you remember those? Maybe I should pull it up, but if you don't, search for Galloway in South Africa. But yeah, so you have this this as well. But of course, we can go to some comments, additional comments here from Malema himself when it comes to how he views white people.
I'm willing to condemn murder. More than willing, but not of white people. I'm not going to play in the hands of white supremacists.
So he's willing to condemn murder, but not of white people. Here's another one.
The mayor of DA in PE is a white man. So these people, when you want to hit them hard, go after a white man. They feel a terrible pain because you have touched a white man. Not because Mashaba and Soli will not be touched. They will be touched, don't worry. But we are starting with this whiteness. We are cutting the throat of whiteness.
Yeah. And they say whiteness to cover itself, but what they really mean is white people, right? He's not willing to condemn the murder of white people.
I'm willing to condemn murder. More than willing, but not of white people. I'm not going to play in the hands of white supremacists.
That's right. It's just white. You want to live as a white person? Well, that's white supremacy. Do you have any kind of power in anywhere in your own native lands? And yes, these are native lands of the Afrikaans because they built the nation and there was no one there. They didn't encounter a black tribe until they came to the Snake River. I mean, it was nomadic tribes moving around. Anyway, we don't have to get into all that stuff. We've covered it. They staked it out for themselves. They built it. And, of course, that's why it was apartheid. It was innate into it. Well, of course, we came here and we built it for us. Why would we let anyone else in? This is just ours. That's how it was. Anyway, so Joost Strydom here from Urania, he made a comment on this. Urania will stand, he said. Let's check out his response to some of these things about reviewing Urania. We need to review. Can we get in there and review it, please? That's what he said.
The Communist Party in South Africa. The Communist Party in South Africa, the economic freedom fighters, best known for kill the Boer, kill the farmer, just handed a memorandum to the Premier of the Northern Cape in Kimberley. They begged the ANC Premier to review the status of Urania and included a long list of demands. Demands such as Urania must fall, whiteness must fall, and land must be expropriated without compensation. The mindset of the people of Urania is a bit different. We do not demand, much rather we focus all our efforts on constructing and building a future for our people. We do not demand solutions from political parties, we create solutions.
Well, that's a problem right there. Right?
Our people. We created schools. We created a college. We created.
Yeah, but that's a repeat of apartheid. Although I think technically they can't say. I forget the details exactly, but I don't think they can, and nor maybe at this stage should they, because they're doing something different. You can argue about. Well, they should just say that it's the whites and stand for the. Fine, you know, other people want to do that, of course, do that too, but this is their approach, and despite valid criticisms of that, of why it might work better to do a different day or a different way or not, this is what they're doing, and I'm overall very supportive of it, great. But now you're creating something where these economic freedom fighters, well, that's, you didn't build that. No, they literally built that. But it was the same thing with South Africa, right? They're redoing South. And again, it's not a critique. It's not to say you shouldn't do this. But I'm saying they're doing mini South Africa in South Africa. And so obviously the same thing that happened to destroy apartheid will be turned against them at some point. Maybe not at this point. Maybe the ANC. Maybe Ramaphosa won't, you know, go in there and tear it up yet or still or at this point. But again, maybe enough political power from or pressure from the EFF or something like that. Yeah, eventually they were like, you know, you're right. They did pass the land expropriation bill without a compensation, right? That has, I think, effectively gone into, that's law now, I believe, right? There's a question of what is private property? What, you know, can you have the private security? There's all these things now that's up in the air. And I'm saying this will just be mirrored and happen in any other country when it goes far enough demographically. To a certain extent, you can't even create things like this in other countries. It would already be shut to try to do an Urania in Germany, for example. What happens, right? We've seen that already with, like, oh my God, there's like lefty journalists hiding in bushes and taking photos of, like, you know, girls on a summer camp that have braids, which is some code for Nazism. And of course, you know, that's a no-no. You can be arrested for you know, braiding your little girl's hair now in Germany, basically.
Community services and even electrical solutions for our people in times of load shedding. We create without denying others their right to existence.
You not giving it to them is, from their point of view, you denying them access to those things. What you do, we do. So that's that racial collectivism kind of thing. Well, again, whites can't have it. You did it. Now it's ours, right? So it's not sharing. Actually, it's just taking. But I'm saying the point is, like, no, you can't just do something successful on your own.
The EFF and Mkhonto Sizwe Party seems like they are in a competition. Who can get the most attention from communities like Urania and Kleinfontein? It seems like their idea of being radical is that everything must be destroyed before anything can be built. The community of Urania then asks of the EFF, MK and others, what do we deny your voter base? If Urania falls, will your people have more job opportunities? Will they have more access to education or schooling?
And I'm not arguing with him. He's making the right points here, obviously. But no, they don't care about building things. What they like is tearing shit down and taking your shit. Like, that's what they like.
Are there any opportunities that we are currently denying you in constructing solutions in places like Urania? That is the question that we put out to the public and to the voters of the EFF. We also ask the voters of the EFF to demand solutions from your leaders. Ask them to create tangible solutions and put those on the table. In the meanwhile, Urania is not a political organization. Urania is not an organization that can be dissolved. Urania is a real community. Communities do not get dissolved. Urania will not fall. Urania will stand. We will stand for our values. We will stand for our principles. We will stand only for our faith and before God.
They could technically do some kind of, like, what, Section 8 type, you know, to borrow from the American model, right? Section 8 housing or something. Like, you can't, you have to have, these people must have access to your community because it's still South Africa.
And we will not fall. Urania will stand.
All right. So anyway, good for them for doing what they're doing, obviously. That's totally fine. But just know that when you're demographically surrounded like that, especially by hostile interests and the, inaccurately so, but still the historical context of where they're building Urania, then yeah, it is just a matter of time before they come after you, right? Here's another reply here, or, you know, comment on this from White Papers, who I believe interviewed both Joost, but also what's his name now, the other guy there, Roost, I think his name is. Anyway, let's listen.
They call you racist for having your own, your own community, but you're actually very open and welcoming people. Julius Malema had a visit to Urania. How did that go?
No, he tried to make a point. You know, tried to show the world he can go anywhere into the heart of the Afrikaner, as I think the words that he used in the media. And our answer to that was, he published it very publicly in the media, saying, I'm going to Urania without speaking to us. I'm going to show the world I will go there. And your first reaction is very, you know, opposing, saying, you know, especially Afrikaners, they can be people that gets very, very stubborn in handling, treating them like that. So I just thought about it for a second, say, what is his goal with this kind of sentiment? Well, his goal is to get media attention, to make a big statement. And the last thing that someone like that would expect is being invited in. So the moment he came here, there was no one stopping him. He came in, showed him the community. Something that really surprised him is that Orania is not this kind of super rich Afrikaner hideaway place. It's much rather a very real place where Afrikaners live from different economic realities, and where the people that live there earn their daily bread by hard work through grace from above. And he was quite surprised to see that. But I think more importantly, the thing was to show, well, here you are. What now, Mr. Malema? You didn't get the gated kind of stop and, you know, the big fight in the media and the big television cameras and everything. It's just a normal community doing normal, quite normal things, although it seems extremist because of the big shifts that it creates and the political space that it opens up. It's just normal people. And it's very tough to say something against Orania if you were treated in a very polite and good manner. And then we said, listen, you are here now. You brought the media with. Let's sit down and have a media conference. And we use that to also explain the Orania model. I don't think it was the reaction he was hoping for. I don't think it's what he envisioned. And he had to leave again without really being able to maneuver on Orania, without really being able to say something. And he left us in peace for 15 years after that. The pragmatic way of not reacting emotionally to things like that opens up the opportunity to create space for yourself.
All right. Well, I mean, that's a great great approach, right, to get the pressure from the hostile government off of you. Like, no, you know, I understand the necessity of it in this situation, right? No, sure, anybody's welcome, but we're the ones doing this, you know, kind of thing. And I'm not sure what their procedure is in terms of, like, letting someone in and all that. But again, beside the point. A lot, you know, I see some criticism against them, which is justified in some cases, but I'm still supportive overall. But you had this interesting pivot, and we covered this with Johannes when he was on too, right? Where Ernst Roots, who is, you know, you can see quickly in the clip there, with this NRA shirt on there, hoodie, flashes by, which decided to sit down with Ben Shapiro to talk about South Africa. And as it says here, the extent of the crisis and what could be done to make things better. And it's interesting, the pivot here towards Ben Shapiro, right? Why do they want to talk about this now? What's the reason? Here's one clip from that interview.
I think it's that part that is puzzling to people, because they've been talking.
I just put this in context, right? I'm not Ben Shapiro is not doing the, oh, it's, there is a white genocide in South Africa, but he's doing the what's wrong with white people doing their own thing in South Africa, and what's the environment around that, and what's the reason? That's where we are now, which is interesting. In one way, he's kind of forced to address this. Now there's a hook here. There's another reason. We'll get to that. But it is interesting that here we are, right? Where you're like, okay, it's coming up to these spheres now, and they have to address this. They have to tackle this. Anyway, let's listen. I'll show you what the reasons are why Ben Shapiro is doing this in a little bit.
Caught the miracle story. They've seen the movies about Nelson Mandela. Mm. They've seen the films and TV shows about the great moment when apartheid ended. And there's sort of been a ban publicly on talking about the problems that exist in South Africa post that, because to mention that there are some fairly significant problems, as it turns out, in post-apartheid South Africa is seen as some sort of endorsement of apartheid itself, which is a false binary.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the problem that we have, is we have this narrative that you can choose between the apartheid system and the current system. And there's only those two options. You have nothing else to choose from. And so you have to choose what's currently happening in South Africa. And if you don't choose that, or if you say this is a problem, that by definition means you want to go back. You want to go to the apartheid system, which no one wants to do. The fact is that the apartheid system didn't work. The current system isn't working. And we need something else. We need a better system. But it's been...
But in a way, isn't that what... Ron, yes, it's not official policy, but I'm saying the idea. And again, look, this is media strategy. Don't just go out now and put a target on your back, deny it, do it and deny it that you're doing it, and all those things, if that's what they're actually doing, right? They might not, I don't know. Well, Ernst Roots, you know, again, as Johannes said, pretty, you know, staunch criticism of him for obvious reasons. And I think he was married to someone of the tribe, was he not? Was that what, that was part of it anyway?
We are very happy that a lot of people are taking note about what's happening in South Africa, because this has been going on for decades. And I think the pendulum has swung so far to the one side, or to the left, you could say, that it has, it's the narrative about South Africa has become so detached from the realities on ground level that it's just not possible to ignore what's happening in South Africa. And so we are grateful that people are talking about this, and people should be talking about it more.
All right. So anyway, there were some replies to this here that you can read about, you know, Ben Shapiro's takes on the Browning of America. Color doesn't matter. Ideology does, obviously. Ernst, you know, backdrop and family and things like that. But anyway, it is interesting, though, that it's coming now basically just because South Africa has been so staunchly pro-Palestinian and anti-Israeli, right?
A struggle between people who very often believe horrible things and people who do not believe horrible things. This is why, for example, South Africa has now shifted dramatically on Israel. They're now accusing South Africa is Israel of a quote-unquote genocide. That, of course, is not a shock. South Africa has been rife with anti-white hatred for years and years since the end of apartheid. A struggle between people, very.
So there it is, right? We're getting a little bit of the exposing the injustices against white people in exchange for, and it's not that like Rania is going to come to power and then shift the political sphere so much that it will now just be pro-Israel yet. But it is interesting that might be one of the main reasons why he's beginning to kind of address this and calling it out. See, I'm saying it's the association again of, and of course that doesn't mean, you know, that it's bad that this is coming out, but I'm saying it's always with a hook, right? It's always a little, well, this is the reason. So in exchange for, you know, more pro-Israel stance, sure, we'll give him a little bit of exposing the anti-white stuff and the, you know, the wokeness or whatever, whatever it is. And someone did a meme, which kind of summarizes it a little bit, where, you know, they're showing an AOC as a representative of kind of like the insane left woke, you know, madness or whatever, and then the Ben Shapiro on the other side, who's the rational, reasonable option, right? It's simple. Your side will push madness until the masses beg for sanity. Then we arrive calm, clean, and reasonable. But our logic will be laced with the chains they'll thank us for. The pendulum will swing, but the cage remains. That's how you win the culture war. Manufacture both sides and let them beg for their own leash. Which is kind of the case, isn't it? And I'm not saying Orania is that leash necessarily or anything like that, but I'm just saying it's a strategy to defeat, you know, wokeness and leftism. And sure, you can have a little bit of, you know, you won't get pro-white takes, but you will get anti-white takes, which is a good start. I mean, not when it comes to Ben Shapiro, he's just totally dishonest on that front, obviously, as is made perfectly, you know, clear in the case, in the past. But it is interesting that the wokeness stuff seems to be basically just kind of a psyop to like take those two steps back to come to a new kind of a new equilibrium where the pro-Israel stuff is like kind of weaved in with the, again, maybe not pro-white stuff, but with the anti-white stuff, at least. There's one more clip here I can play. Because the question is, at the end of the day, well, what is the option? What's the reason? Or not reason, what's the... If you're attacked this way, if you have leaders politically, like Malema, talking openly about not condemning murder of white people and saying we got to slit the throat of whiteness and all these things, what are you allowed to do to defend yourself against that kind of stuff? How do you insulate yourself from those types of threats? Well, the solution is to do something that's just for you and for your own. Of course, ultimately, taking back our nations would be good. But even such a small thing, and it, not that it's insignificant, or it's very good that they're doing what they're doing in Orania, but in comparison to the rest of the country, that's total just anti-white chaos, while Orania has a tiny little slice of that just surrounded by madness. And so the question is how long that will be able to stand. Here's one of these anti-Boer, anti-Afrikaner propaganda piece here, obviously from, I don't know what mainstream TV this is, but here's someone who's like, well, white people are under attack. We have to defend ourselves. And of course, that's a bad thing, right? If white people have power in any sphere, well, that's white power. And we denounce white power. And so therefore, no white people anywhere can have or hold any power, because that would be morally wrong, you see.
Are you afraid to be in South Africa?
I'm not afraid of anything. I'm ready.
Ready for?
For whatever comes.
These people believe that a civil war is on the brink of breaking out between the blacks and the whites.
Believe? It's already happening, lady.
Protected by armed men, André Betenbach is the leader of this movement. His aim is to create an independent state where no black people are allowed.
But I can tell you that the white people in this country, they do not do it. If the train is late, we do not put the train to fire. And if the buses are late, we don't put the buses on fire. And if we are unsatisfied with the services delivered, we don't start throwing stones and burning tires and those kind of things. That's one of the main differences between us and the black people in South Africa.
Man, what an evil man, huh?
The way they behave. And it's not us that have to change our attitude. They have to change their behavior. If they want to be reckoned as civilized people, then they should act like civilized people.
Bridge too far.
Well, they must demonstrate that they are civilized, then we will believe that they are civilized.
It's an openly racist rhetoric. For André Breitenbach, the thought of everyone living together is impossible, and he's not content with simply speaking about his...
Well, time will probably prove this man right.
...views during meetings.
Yeah, I think
like
it's already proving right.
This, along with other Afrikaners, he has already built the state he's dreamed of. An hour and a half north of Johannesburg, at the end of this road, is a border post. But we're still in South Africa. To get through his checkpoint, you must fit strict criteria.
Morning.
Is that the Family Guy chart meme he's doing right there? What is, man? I think I had that somewhere. But yeah, if you're these shades, you can pass. If you're the other shades, you can't come in. But you see, they constantly do that, right? This is the country club we couldn't get into. This is the, here is somewhere where you're not, like, they don't want you there. They're doing their, just leave. But this is also the folly of the leave me alone-ism, right? That eventually it's like, no, they will come. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. But I'm just saying, don't expect that long-term to work.
Danny the Bear. So everybody has to see the name.
Ooh, fascism.
Welcome to Kleinfontein, an enclave stretching over...
Okay, yeah, that is Kleinfontein. Was that, how do you pronounce that again?
Welcome to Kleinfontein, an enclave stretching over 800 hectares, surrounded by barbed wire.
Ooh, it's like a reverse concentration camps where they hold the rest of the country prisoner. That's the framing here.
Good morning, Danny De Beer.
Does anybody know what show that's from? I gotta look in, see if we can find that. I want to see the rest of that. But anyway, that's a short clip there. I think this was a little fountain, exactly, Klein No More Lies is Kleinfontein. So in South Africa, under the ANC, we will have Orania, Cape Town, and this place as a white state, and the president, Ramaphosa, he's not going far enough, right? Don't see anything wrong with it. So I'm saying that it doesn't matter how small it is. It doesn't matter. It can be a tiny, insignificant speck on the map, and that is enough for these people to totally freak out. White people are not allowed to have anything. If you live safely and happily with your own, that is the crime. Do you see where this is going? And the obvious, you know, trajectory of this. And yeah, so how do you defend yourself against that? Well, you have to build your own. That's the reason they don't allow you to have it is the reason you do need it. And it's not only that, that needs to expand and continue to grow and be much bigger, obviously. But anyway, we'll talk about some of those things. I'm sure they will overlap the discussion tomorrow there with Curtis Stone and kind of the overall trends of back to the land movements, intentional community, things like Orania and so many others, Kleinfontein, these places. And you know, how do you move forward? I'm sure Curtis has some ideas about this. I've listened to some of his spaces, very, very good stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. So that's live tomorrow here. Tune in for that. redeyes.tv/live. Great way to join us, but you can watch us obviously on, you can watch us on Odyssey or Rumble. And we put up stuff in the archives, obviously over at BitChute. We put it up on Telegram, on VK. We link it up on redsmembers.com as well, obviously. You can watch them on Gab. I think most of the shows we upload to Gab as well. And, of course, X, you can watch us there, or Twitter. You can watch us there live or the archived versions. We do have some clips and stuff, too, on our Instagram, by the way. I hear Instagram is the Wild West currently for some interesting reason. It's almost more based than Twitter, which, of course, has its issues. But anyway, here's some of the places where you can join us and tune in if you want to catch us in the archives, if you can't make it live. All right, very good. I think that about wraps up the show here for today. That's what I got for you. So we'll be back tomorrow with Curtis Stone. So tune in for that, as I said, 24th of April. And then, of course, Flashback Friday after that, Western Warrior, some of the stuff that we do in-studio, guest here on Thursday. Make sure you don't miss that. We're setting that to starting at 5 p.m. Eastern. So that should be good as well. Stay tuned for more details on that. In the meantime, please do consider to sign up for a membership at redeyesmembers.com. It's only $10 per month. It helps us tremendously. Great way to support us. So we can continue not only doing this, but invite more guests in studio. We can continue to produce content, help to bring our people this vital information, help to wake us up and help to connect people, network people, forming communities. I think tomorrow the show on that will be really interesting and some interesting tips from Curtis on how to basically do some of those things and what's the best approach. And it might not be a one-size-fits-all, but there are a couple of different options of people trying this out there and what some of the trappings for that is. So that's coming up here. But Subscribestar or Locals, you can join us over there too if you want to get access to Western Warrior and the members-exclusive segments that we have. It's a great way to support us. Then, of course, if you do want a producer or executive producer tier, you can get that over at redashmembers.com or Subscribestar, another great way of supporting us and making sure that we can continue doing this. Thank you to our producers, T. Lothrop Stoddard, V. Miller, Resin Revolt, Good Luck Lap, Jake, Red Pill Rundown, French 47, Mark Smith, No One Jeeves, Resident Ubunga, Mongoose, William Fox, Angry White Soccer Mom, The Second Wanderer, Operation Werewolf, The Ride Never Ends, Last Place Simp, Joseph Hart, Purple Haze, Rex Ballington, Call Me Combo Deal, The Dearborn Toxic Event, Brendan Anthony. We also have Penelope 7 USA, Bertrand Comperi, Dixie Drone Force. We got Arctic Wolf, shout out to Albert. We also have Europe Awake and Teutonic Werebear. Thank you so much, guys. We appreciate you tremendously for making this show possible. Also, thanks to our producers, Mr. Walker 696. We also have Lord H.P. Lovecraft, Johansson, Trevor, Leroy Demand, Der Schwabe, Snarkpup Sonata for Violin, Eyes Open, Whitewater Rafting Fan, Mr. Lemry, Jetfire, Urinu, ExposeFlyers.com, Obadiah Hakeswill, Shane B, Perfect Brute, did I say Obadiah Hakeswill? I think I did. Restitutor Orbis, Single Action Army, Alcyon, and the Boo Man. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it tremendously. So, get one of those if you want to upgrade your membership. And do keep in mind as well, by the way, we do manually activate your account on redicemembers.com because of financial censorship and blackmail from the major payment processors. So we do have to manually activate your account at redicemembers.com. We try to do that within 24 hours, but if you haven't gotten yours activated for whatever reason, I think there's a couple of you guys out there lingering. If you're watching, you did sign up, and we wrote back to you to get like info about what account name and or email you have that you signed up with, and we didn't get a reply. So if you're out there watching and you haven't gotten it activated, reach out to us, redice@protonmail.com. That's redice@protonmail.com, and we'll activate that. So thank you so much for your patience on that, by the way, because that's one of those things outside of our control. But if you want instant access right away to all the latest, subscribe, star, or locals, that works fine as well. Odyssey is currently out because their stripe was yanked from them for various reasons. All right, very, very good. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you all. Thank you to Albert again for the dono early in the show, for the generous dono. As always, we appreciate it greatly. So we'll be back tomorrow with much more Curtis Stone, Flashback Friday, more in-studio guest appearances. So make sure you don't miss that, everybody. We'll be back here with more soon, of course. Until then, take care, everybody. Have a great day. Keep fighting, and we'll see you next time. Folk first.
New Red Ice merch available now. Folk First t-shirts for adults and for toddlers. Fatigues for men. Our favorite, the Red Ice Camper mug or ceramic with black print. High quality leather keychain with solar boat imprint. Our Red Ice hat, one of our best sellers. Pick one up today. Or why not? Gray Auslander Rouse t-shirts for both women and men. We also have fridge magnets, Folk First, One Disease, and our black men's t-shirt with the classic red solar boat. Folk First. Get your Red Ice merch from LanasLlama.com. Get an item today. Lana's Llama, proud sponsor of Red Ice.
Thank you for watching. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for exclusive members content. Don't miss our latest shows, interviews, and other videos only for subscribers. You can also become a member by signing up at subscribestar.com/redice. Get full access and help support our work. See you on the other side.